There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic? It's Venus. Venus. Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media and a critical look at our media environment. My name is Paul Reisman, I'm your host. Producer Drew Tirico is at the controls. On today's program, Urbana Public TV moves a little bit closer to Democracy Now! And perhaps some surprising changes or not so much changes at the FCC. On today's show, do stay tuned. On today, November 19th, the Urbana Public TV Commission held a special meeting. And the Urbana Public TV Commission is a commission which oversees the public access TV channel, which is run by the city of Urbana. And that's kind of an unusual situation, since typically public access TV channels are run independently from city administrations. At this meeting, they took up one of the big issues they took up is the effort to bring the program Democracy Now!, which is heard in its radio version on many community radio stations like WEFT. There's a TV analog, which is a TV version which plays on Free Speech TV and other public access TV stations around the country. There's an effort to bring that onto Urbana Public TV. And we've been covering it. It's been quite a travail. It's been a many month-long effort, which includes some opposition, that it seems, from the mayor of Urbana. But not much opposition from the Urbana Public TV Commission itself. And so, Drew, you were there at the commission
that's
meeting
right.
today.
Yeah, that's right. I was there. And today's commission meeting was really, they can't just say, oh, we want to put Democracy Now! On. They have to sort of amend the rules now to make room for the program. So today's meeting was really a meeting about amending and drafting a new set of rules, which they did pass. There are a couple key rules that were passed to allow for Democracy Now! Put in the rule changes. There are also some rule changes about equipment donations, also for Democracy Now!, but in more in general.
Meaning allowing it.
Mm-hmm, allowing equipment donations, allowing for series programs to be sponsored by UPTV members, like Democracy Now!. And there were some other sort of bookkeeping rule changes that they made to sort of update with technology, because a lot of their rule, the last time they drafted their rule changes, I think they said, was in the early 90s, so everything was tapes, all tapes.
Right, now. So all the discussion in their rules and policy manual is about videotapes, and now they use DVDs and other forms of media, and I guess there are some people who took a very strict interpretation of the rules to say which they couldn't take in DVDs and
right.
such, so they've
exactly.
amended it to be more flexible, I
so
guess.
So their policy is really changing pretty rapidly, and a lot of that is because of the interest that's been generated around the Democracy Now! Issue. So I went to the meeting. I took some audio. What I'm going to play for you is not the sort of debates about little P's and Q's of the rule changes themselves, but some audience participation. Randall Cotton, the one who's been pushing Democracy Now!, had some comments for the commission, asking them why it's still taking so long, why there's still this block, why can't Democracy Now! go on tomorrow? These rule changes probably will be passed. What's still hindering them? It turns out there's a budget amendment that has to be passed in order for the equipment to be received from Randall.
I see. And these changes to the rules also have to be approved by the city council, isn't that
right?
Just
exactly.
that true? So there's yet another layer of bureaucracy
right.
that the commission really only has advisory status to make actual changes of policy that has to go to the Urbana City Council.
And the city council will be meeting to discuss these very rule changes on Monday at 7 p.m. in the Urbana City Council chambers. And there will also be a resolution on the table put out by Representative Daniel Chynoweth, who has asked that there be all the blocks be removed from Democracy Now!'s path, such as the affiliation that has to happen in order for the city to be able to legally receive Democracy Now!
The affiliation with Free Speech Television.
Exactly.
Okay.
The affiliation with Free Speech TV and with the Pacifica Network, actually. And remove any of these other blockages to pass these rules, and that'll be on the agenda, too, and it's expected that that probably will pass without contention as well. So here's Randall asking about what's going on with this budget amendment to the mayor, Mayor Satterthwaite, who was at the meeting again today.
Yes, my name is Randall Cotton. I'm a resident of Champaign, 508 East Clark Street, apartment 404. And I was wondering if someone could clarify exactly why council approval is necessary for donation of equipment.
Well, I think we talked about that before. Some donations require a budget amendment. Members have to go through council.
And that's also why we suggested maybe amending the wording to clarify which ones need to and which ones don't.
Maybe perhaps a little more detail, but why does it require a budget amendment?
Well, I would say one thing is sometimes when you get a contribution, there is a responsibility on the part of the receiving group. Sometimes things cost money. For example, if there's a piece of equipment donated, the city would have to be prepared to pay for maintenance or other things to go with it. That's my first thought.
Is that the reason then? Because there may be attendant costs of receiving?
There's a variety of reasons. I mean, sometimes anytime we get even a donation, such as the biggest example is the Library Foundation. They're raising a lot of money, and then they donate that to the city. Well, we've got to accept that as a revenue and then put in the budget, spending it as an expense, putting it in the library fund and then expending it. And so, obviously, if UPTV gets a contribution of $2 million, well, that's going to be very significant. But we rarely get examples like that, but that's an example of what our process is in accepting donations, or grants for that matter. We get all kinds of grants that are from, a couple hundred dollars to several thousand dollars, and all of those, we accept them. And if we know about them in the budget process, we include them in the budget. If we don't know about them in the budget process, we have to have a budget amendment to accept them and then spend it.
Would a budget amendment or other city council action be necessary before the donation was made, or could that just be done after? As a matter of
well, it's usually concurrent. Usually the and sometimes it happens both ways. If sometimes we get the donation and then have a budget amendment afterwards, like most common examples are grants, and sometimes we'll get a grant and actually have it in the city budget and do the budget amendment later, and sometimes we do it in advance. It just depends on the sequence of events and when we know about it, when we get it, and when we plan on using the money.
Would you say that there is a city council action required or a budget amendment required before UPTV would obtain the equipment, would receive the donated equipment for Democracy Now?
I would say probably so.
Yeah. And why would that be?
Well, it's likely to be a significant donation, and it uses, it's a fixture to a city building, if I'm understanding correct.
Pardon? It's capital improvement, right?
Yeah, it would be like a capital improvement. But it's not that big of a deal to do that. I don't know of any circumstance where we have accepted a donation or a grant that the council has turned it down.
Would you be willing to provide the exact requirements that need to be fulfilled before a budget amendment would be proposed to the city council in order for the city to receive donated equipment for Democracy Now?
Well, you're going to have to come up with something more concrete than that. I mean, do you have a proposal as far as what the equipment is?
There's been an outstanding proposal since May, sir.
Well,
if I could We just need to, I mean, we've talked about it, Randall. We know the process of what it takes, but we just need to sit down and put the equipment on paper, how much the equipment costs, how much it costs to install. We just need to get the numbers together and all the equipment we need and how much the donation would actually come out to, so then we can move on to council. We just need to, it wouldn't take much to do it.
And that was part of the UPTV commission meeting that happened today at the Urbana City Council chambers at noon. And that was Randall Cotton speaking to the commission, asking them about what's blocking Democracy Now! From being able to be broadcast, and is in fact a budget amendment now that has to take place in order for the equipment to be donated to the city. And now we're going to hear an interview I did with Randall afterwards, and we're going to get his comments on the whole proceedings and how he feels about how UPTV is progressing around this issue.
What is your reaction to sort of the rules that were passed today that are going to be passed on to the city council, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I expect they'll be passed, and there's quite a number of very positive changes. Of course, they needed to be updated for technical reasons for many years, but this opens up a lot of new opportunities, I think, for UPTV members, and thankfully there still is no, at least at the present time, there's no fee to actually join, so I'm hoping that it'll increase participation. I expect it will, and we'll get a lot more programming on this channel, which is pretty underutilized right now.
Yeah, I know Greg mentioned once again the live studio that's going to be for call-in facilities. I mean, what do you think about that in lieu of the whole, in lieu of the resistance you've had to Democracy Now? Do you feel like the commission is really working harder now to improve relations with the community and to improve the quality of programming that goes on?
Yes, well, you know, given the very large public turnout, demonstrating pretty keen interest in what's happening at UPTV these days, I think that they are taking heed of that and paying a little more attention and concentrating their efforts a little more, and you know, I'm encouraged by that. And you know, it's I was particularly encouraged by the unanimous vote in favor of two very key changes, which are included in this larger set that was passed today, that provided for explicitly provided for Democracy Now!, which you know, there's pretty widespread public interest in getting that going. So I'm pretty encouraged and happy with how the UPTV Commission is working these days.
So what exactly is left before Democracy Now! Can get on the air? What was discussed? I know we just discussed it, but can you reiterate what that was for us?
The mayor is insisting on a what he calls a budget amendment before Democracy Now! Would be put on the air. Of course, this is something that, you know, he could have taken care of many months ago, I'm sure. I mean, if it's just a matter of amendment, if it's just a procedural matter, if it's just paperwork, if it's just bureaucracy, it could have been done months, many, many months ago. It's not particularly clear that that's really necessary. And particularly, the mayor said that in some cases, the donation is accepted, and then the budget amendment is taken care of after the fact. Personally, I really can't view it any other way. It's just another delay tactic, given the fact that UPTV staff originally accepted this proposal for Democracy Now! And said it was going to happen, and then the mayor became involved and actively opposed it in so many ways, providing a variety of different arguments that never held any water. And now at the end, 6 months later, he says, oh, well, this has to go to the city council and we have to have a budget amendment, but he didn't really seem to be particularly intent on making that happen. He said that he didn't have any proposal in place for this coming city council meeting coming up on Monday, when there's actually a resolution on the agenda that essentially mandates the city put Democracy Now! On before January 3rd. If the mayor really had any interest in getting Democracy Now! In response to the very widespread public demand for this programming, he would have done it months ago. And I can't view this any other way. It's just another tactic to delay Democracy Now! From being aired. And really, it's a form of censorship. He is, for many months now, he is preventing programming from being broadcast on UPTV that, if he had not intervened, would already be on.
And that was Randall Cotton, once again, an interview I did with him at the UPTV commission meeting. And as he said, there will be a city council meeting coming up this Monday at 7 o'clock in the city council chambers.
In Urbana.
In Urbana.
On Vine Street. Well, I think what's interesting, real quickly, what comes up in this, of course, is you have this conflict of interest, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a conflict of interest between what the interest of the city of Urbana is, which includes its politicals, you know, the people who are elected and hold political office, versus what is the interest of the city of Urbana and the interest of people who get Urbana Public TV, which includes the cities of Champaign, Urbana, and Savoy, much larger community. And you can see how they come at odds. And that's why in most cities, public television or public access television is run independently, such as Chicago Access Network up in Chicago, which is run as an independent corporation, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation, which has these channels, does productions, and puts on programming. And because it has a public interest motivation primarily and fundamentally, is less susceptible to some of these political machinations, or at least it can't be held up by purely political machinations, since someone like a mayor or a city council person would not have direct control. Of course, the other side of that is many times for like something like a Chicago Access Network, city funding gets filtered in so in many ways, and that can be held up. You can see how the fingers of the political process can really be very much obstructionist when it comes to community-minded broadcasting.
Exactly.
Just as obstructionist as many commercial motives can be.
Mm-hmm.
It shows you how models like community radio often work in that, like, a WEFT does not function off of tax dollars from the local municipality, isn't under the municipality's control, and functions as its own independent organization. At least frees it from many of these machinations and the need to go through so many bureaucratic steps to get things on. It's not perfect.
Right.
But it can show you that there are some pitfalls there. And I know that I think that for many people it will be on their agenda. And then when the next contract negotiation goes up, the franchise between Insight Cable Television and cities of Champaign-Urbana, to add in a full channel of public access that is not run by either of the cities.
Indeed. And, you know, I think the commissioners themselves have gathered that from this experience.
Yes, it does seem
I
that
think
way.
There's a lot of rumblings within the UPTV commission to push for that sort of independence. There's a lot of rumblings to push the cable company to give them another channel, to give them more space, and to separate the UPTV from Urbana's city government. So we hope. I'd like to see that happen in the future, personally.
It's generally, public access television can only be better.
Mm-hmm.
And you are listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at a world of grassroots independent media and our media environment. I'm Paul Reisman. I'm your host. Producer Drew Tirico is over there at the controls. And thank you, Drew, for going out to the UPTV meeting this afternoon.
No problem.
And, of course, when we're not on the air, you check out the Media Geek website, www.mediageek.org. You've got news on the Media Geek blog, and you can listen to archive programs in the open source Ogg Vorbis format, and of course, the venerable old MP3 format. And now we're going to head over and check out some more news headlines. This year, two Champaign men were arrested and charged with criminal eavesdropping for videotaping police performing traffic stops and street patrols in Champaign's North End and Campus Town. After tremendous pressure from community activists and the Champaign City Manager and Chief of Police, Champaign County State's Attorney John Pylon dropped charges against one of the men, Martell Miller, in late September. But the other man, Patrick Thompson, still faces eavesdropping charges in addition to other unrelated felony charges. A pretrial hearing on Thompson's eavesdropping charge was held on Thursday, November 18th, where his attorney filed for and received a continuance of the trial until December 16th. By that date, current state's attorney, Republican John Pylon, will be out to be replaced by incoming state's attorney, Democrat Julia Reitz, who soundly defeated Pylon on November 4th. Community outrage over the eavesdropping case is partially responsible for Pylon's defeat, and there's hope that Thompson's case may be handled differently under Reitz's watch.
In a surprise turn of events, Democratic FCC Commissioner Jonathan Adelstein has been re-nominated to the commission by President Bush. As early as last week, it was widely believed that Adelstein, who has been an outspoken proponent of media reform issues, had very little chance of being re-upped. This is due primarily to the defeat of Senator Tom Daschle, who was Adelstein's former boss and his chief supporter in Congress. Edelstein was first nominated to the FCC in 2002 to fill out at least the last 6 months of the term of a commissioner who left the FCC. Since the end of that term, Edelstein's reappointment has been held up for nearly 2 years by Senate Republicans as retribution for Democrats' filibusters against a few of the president's judicial nominees and as a bargaining chip over other nominations. Edelstein appeared before the Senate Commerce Committee on Thursday, November 18th, where former Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott apologized to Edelstein for the delays. Under questioning by Committee Chairman Senator John McCain, Edelstein said that he hopes the FCC will conduct a more thorough review of the media landscape now that an appeals court has remanded the agency's media ownership limits. He also pledged his desire to hold more public hearings, conduct more studies, and work more closely with Congress on the issue. Edelstein's nomination to the FCC was approved by the Senate Commerce Committee and now moves to the full Senate, where it is expected to pass.
Although he apologized to FCC Commissioner Jonathan Edelstein, Trent Lott was not so easy on three nominees to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting who also appeared in front of the Senate Commerce Committee on November 18th. The CPB is a congressionally financed independent corporation that provides funding for public radio and television. Lott spoke out against what he sees as a liberal bias on public radio and television stations, but also said he doesn't think stations that use taxpayer dollars should espouse specific viewpoints, whether they're conservative or liberal. Nominee Gay Hart Gaines, up for her first full term after accepting a recess appointment in December, stated that she shares Lott's concerns. She told the committee, quote, "I care a lot about objectivity and balance. I feel that the entire board is very diverse and cares a lot about substance and objectivity." End quote. No word yet on what this means for Tucker Carlson, the right-wing pundit on CNN's Crossfire, who also has his own show on PBS.
After the Senate Commerce Committee adjourned, Committee Chair John McCain told reporters that Congress is unlikely to act on broadcast indecency or the digital television transition before this session ends. With regard to indecency legislation, McCain said that too many lawmakers want to add controversial provisions to a bill that would raise fines for violations and require the FCC to take the violations into account when renewing TV and radio licenses. These provisions would get in the way of quick passage. On the issue of the transition to digital TV, McCain said, quote, "It's too big an issue with the American people," end quote. Congress will pass a non-binding resolution stating when lawmakers want TV stations to complete the switch to digital TV and return their old analog channels to the government, he predicted. The date of the proposed deadline was still under negotiation.
So we have some interesting things going on in there in Congress, and really the Edelstein renomination was the biggest surprise.
Yeah, that is indeed a surprise.
It really came out of nowhere, I think. Probably Commissioner Edelstein was as surprised as anyone else, and some people are sort of scratching their heads over it. Since he was such an outspoken critic of the new media ownership rules, which have been sent back to Congress, he's been a really outspoken critic of media ownership and how it's going, of consolidation, of Clear Channel, of the large media conglomerates, and has come, you know, consistently been critical of Chairman Michael Powell, who is staying on for another term, even though his father is leaving the Bush cabinet. And it makes one wonder. I mean, part of it, I wonder if it isn't just because Edelstein, as part of the minority on the FCC, is largely ineffective. I mean, and not his own fault. But it's going to be a constant 3-2 vote on anything that has any significant party affiliation, and then there'll be occasional alliances on things which they can all get behind. And so maybe having a vocal sort of opponent in some cases on the FCC might be better, politically speaking, if you're the president or Congress, in terms of saying, hey, you know, so this isn't an FCC that just rolls over for the Republicans, you know, maybe sort of useful. It makes life a little harder on the telecom business because it means that decisions might be more likely to be much more split, 3-2, which no one really likes because it's about regulation. And you really want to know what the playing field is. You want to know that it's a clear message, and a 3-2 ruling on anything is not a clear message. It means also if the political winds change, so may it flip the other way. Whereas if you have like a 4-1 or what often happens on the FCC in a lot of issues is a 5-0, you know that that's pretty much the way things are going to stay for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm.
But this indecency thing is going to continue to haunt us.
Of course.
You know, and I mean, from the standpoint of political theater and spectacle, I kind of enjoy watching it because it's crazy allies, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you have the likes of sort of Viacom and Disney ABC now sort of up against the religious right, mm-hmm. you know, on these issues. And you see the religious right then, in some cases, taking up the issue of media ownership because they see the connection between, you know, rampant indecency and consolidated ownership. So you have very strange bedfellows going on. Indeed. And it cuts across party lines, too, because it is not solidly either a Democratic or a Republican issue. Senator Ernest Hollings was pushing very hard on the indecency legislation. He was a Democrat, whereas you have other Republican senators like a John McCain, which seem to take a more moderate viewpoint on it. So mm-hmm. it's going to be an interesting season next session in Congress after the winter break.
A witch hunt season.
It may be a witch hunt season. And speaking of that, before we close out here, mm-hmm. Last night, I was watching David Letterman, The Late Late Show, or I guess just The Late Show with David Letterman, and Howard Stern was on. And it was sort of an anticipated appearance since he was going to speak most publicly for the first time on the media about his going to Sirius Satellite in 2006 and leaving Viacom-owned Infinity Radio Broadcasting, partially due to all the fines that Viacom has received, although Viacom, by and large, has supported him, at least by keeping him employed and continuing to pay the fines to keep him on the air. What's interesting, though, of course, is Viacom owns CBS, which owns and produces The Late Shows. So it's interesting that he could be sort of more outspoken on The Late Show than he could be on his own radio show, even though it is the same corporate umbrella. But what surprised me is that there was a surprisingly cogent and reasonable conversation about media ownership, about consolidation, especially about Clear Channel, between David Letterman and Howard Stern. So I actually have a couple seconds of that here, if you could cue that up. And I'd like to share, because it's surprising to hear this, you know, on Viacom-owned television late at night.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear it.
Now, here's what I know about Clear Channel.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not paying attention to anything. I'm just doing my little dog and pony show here.
Right.
I read an article in Rolling Stone this summer.
Right.
Clear Channel owns 1,200 radio stations. Many stations in the same market. They've essentially wiped out individuality of the radio station and played havoc with the record industry and the music industry in live concerts. I was stunned.
Well, yeah.
Three corporations in this country control 60% or more of the radio audience. Three corporate entities.
When I was working for, I think, from nine stations on a whim, and one of the reasons they fired me is I didn't support President Bush. Clear Channel is busy throwing parties in markets for the Iraq war. And I hardly think that's something you should be throwing a party for. They're throwing rallies. And so I didn't support that. And the next day I was fired.
And he was speaking about Clear Channel that was when he was that he was working for, by extension, that he was mm-hmm. Howard Stern's program was syndicated there. But it's kind of surprising. Of course, then Howard just goes on to shill for his new Sirius Satellite program and encouraging everyone to go buy Sirius Satellite radios to go listen to his program. Because, you know, Howard's mostly out for Howard. But I was actually surprised at Letterman more than anyone else and actually having researcher up on the topic at all, having an opinion about industry consolidation, especially considering that in Viacom-owned Infinity has been responsible for the sort of the downward slide of radio as Clear Channel has, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's definitely some words you don't hear on mainstream broadcast television very often at all. So I think that's definitely a media moment for you.
I'm not going to send Letterman a thank you card yet, but it is nice to hear nevertheless.
Mm-hmm.
And just incidentally, a little last bit is Mel Karmazin, who used to be Stern's head at Viacom, his boss at Viacom in Quiddick a year or so ago, is now joining on as CEO of Sirius Satellite.
Interesting.
So and Karmazin was largely responsible for Infinity turning into the broadcasting powerhouse that it was, or that it is. So it's an interesting move over there, and it boosted Sirius's stock majorly.
Of course, yeah.
Whether it actually turns into anything substantial is yet to be seen. Of course, you might argue that given that there are only two satellite radio companies, that it's actually more concentrated than broadcast radio. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. We'll be back in 1 week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek on the web at www.mediageek.org. There you can read the Media Geek blog for news that can't fit onto the show, as well as download archive episodes of the program in MP3 in the open source Ogg Vorbis format. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to paul@mediageek.org. I'm host and executive producer Paul Riesmandel. Our producer is Drew Tirico. Media Geek is produced live at community radio station WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some pre-production happens at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Media Geek is also heard on KRFP, Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, and on KQRP in Salida, California. And Media Geek is free to broadcast on your local non-commercial station, too. To inquire, please send email to paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.